Want to gain an edge in international markets with foreign currency exchange? At Associated Bank, we've got you. We can assist you in obtaining or converting foreign currency and managing the exchange risk to your advantage. Visit associatedbank.com/commercial. Member FDIC.
We're on with David Fowler, SVP of Capital Markets at Associated Bank. David, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me, Steve.
I think we started our conversations way back when with Brexit, and we have another Brexit topic this morning. I was surprised to see that the European Union and the UK seem to be coming together, not to rejoin the European Union, but to work on some of the differences and maybe smooth some old problems out.
Yeah, it looks like they're finally kind of working out that maybe not such a great idea to have left in the first place.
Yeah.
What's interesting about the discussions now, particularly around dynamic coherence, is that all of these offers were made to the British government in 2020 with Theresa May. So all they've done is basically wasted about 5 years of unnecessary pain. And the idea of this, you know, dynamic alignment is really pretty simple. It's that, you know, the European Union says if you want to export to us, you have to meet our regulatory standards. And that's really all the UK is being asked to do. And under the Conservative government, that seemed to be a real problem because they had sold the population on the idea of, you know, our laws, we make our own laws, we, you know, go it alone and everything is going to be great. And then they found out that everything probably isn't that great. And, you know, if you want to trade into other countries, generally you have to kind of be a rule taker for those places. And I think that's what finally has been kind of decided and accepted.
Out of all the things that we talked about were happening in the UK after the Brexit happened, what will this smooth over? What are some of the things that will get better for the UK?
It's going to be very good for agricultural trade. It'll be very good for industrial trade, particularly for small businesses. So right now, every item that you ship from the UK to the European Union has to be custom cleared individually. So if you had a company that has, you know, 100 sales going to Europe on a particular day, each one of those packages has to be cleared individually. So extra freight costs extra time, extra labor. And, you know, it just becomes incredibly inefficient and expensive. Like sometimes these checks will be £200 or £300. So if you have, you know, 50 or 60, it adds up, which means that for smaller businesses, the European market was closed out because the cost of the regulation was more than the cost of the product. Now they're getting rid of all that stuff. Mm. So now they will have not exactly free trade, but something very close to it. The one set of kind of one sector that probably will come out a little worse will be the fishing sector, which is, you know, politically significant, but not employment significant. It's only less than 1% of the total workforce. Mm. But they've now agreed to give the EU access for 13 years to British waters, wow, which is a lot, you know. And it's funny because in the very beginning, back in, you know, 2018, 2020, when all the negotiations were going on, fishing was the one thing that always kept coming up. And once again, it's now the thing that sealed the deal for this new approach. So, you know, there is a certain symmetry in things.
I've asked you this before, and given the latest developments, I'll ask again. Is there any chance that that Britain goes back to the EU, that they get rid of Brexit?
No, I think it's virtually none. It's not so much that the British wouldn't want to go back, although I don't think they do. I don't think the EU would take them back. It's just the relationship is very fractured. And it will take many years to repair it. And as a result, it's very unlikely that they will be able to come back, or at least come back on terms that they would accept.
You know, one of the bright spots for the UK in the latest tariff troubles that's been happening, President Trump threatened to put 50% tariffs on the EU. Well, the UK is not part of the EU, so they're not going to be hit with those, are they, if they come to fruition?
No, they're not. So that's kind of good news and bad news, right? So it's good news to the extent that they would have a theoretically more favored access to the U.S. market, but that U.S. market is 7,000 miles away. they have less favored access to the EU market, which is, you know, you can see from, you know, from Dover,
right?
Yeah, right? So, you know, I wouldn't think that's going to be the, you know, the, it sounds great, but like a lot of things that sound great, it's probably not as good as it seems.
Talk to us a little bit about where the European Union tariff story stands. I know the president said he's going to wait until July 9th. He's put this new 50% on hold. How's that going over in the EU, and do they really care at this point?
I think they care to an extent. So the last, you know, 5-6 months, the European Union has seen a very kind of dramatic change in approach in the relationship between the US and the EU on a number of fronts, trade only being one of them. There is kind of a feeling that even if a deal is struck, it'll only last as long as the US want it to last. So in ways, the EU, like a lot of other countries, is looking at alternative partners to deal with. You know, we've seen an increase in negotiations between the EU and China. You're seeing increased negotiations between the EU and South America and Central America. They already have a special arrangement with part of Africa called the Lomé Convention, which kind of derived from mainly the French, Belgian, and Spanish colonies in Africa. They have preferential access anyway to the European Union. So I think what you're seeing is going to be trade diversion. And as we saw in the last Trump administration, if you take farmers, so, you know, farmers, soybean farmers in Illinois, in Iowa, and places like that, lost markets, particularly into the European Union, because of the trade war back then, that they've never recovered. And primarily because once a new trade flow begins, it's very hard to go back. The incentives aren't there. And, you know, to an extent, it's kind of once bitten, twice shy, or, mm-hmm. you know, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. I think that relationship has changed. And I don't think it's going to come back for a while. And finally, the other kind of interesting thing about the relationship between the EU and the US is that the US has a trade deficit in goods with the European Union, but it has a trade surplus in services. Now, the goods trade is better, but it's not that much better. And I think what the US may find is that rather than the EU rolling over as, you know, Britain basically did, you may see them come with a panel of tariffs on U.S. services, so banking, accounting, you know, law services, IT, social media companies, all this kind of stuff, may face a very different regime. And I think the EU really wants to make sure that the U.S. realize that, you know, we're talking about equals. Like, there are more people in the European Union. It's a bigger market. The U.S. would lose out a lot if they could not trade directly with the EU on favorable terms. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out.
And really, I mean, what you're talking about is a real backfiring on the Trump administration, on the U.S. if some of this goes forward.
Yeah, I think it will.
Yeah.
I think it will.
You mentioned earlier that the EU is looking to find other markets. Another big country is thinking the same thing, doing the same thing. China has been looking for other markets. I know you mentioned the soybean farmers in Illinois, that Brazil has also decided to take in more soybeans, I think, from China, or is it the other way
around? Actually, the other way around.
So you have these big countries who are moving on without us.
Yeah, pretty much. And part of it is, you know, just trade flows. And part of it is, you know, if you take the European Union will not accept genetically modified products. So no agricultural product that is genetically modified is acceptable in the European Union. They went to the USDA and said, these are our rules. You know, if your farmers want to export to Europe, which they did for years, they have to follow these rules. And there was a lot of kind of to-ing and fro-ing here. When they went to the Brazilians and the Argentinians, they said, these are the rules. Okay, we'll start tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that trade won't change. Like, the reason why it never went back is partially because of, you know, the new trade flow start, but partially because they knew that they could get product that would meet the phytosanitary standards. And that's what you're going to see. Like, it's there's more to trade than just we'll slap on a tariff. You know, there's all kinds of other ways to go. You adjust trade from, you know, country A to B. And I think part of what's going on right now is that there's a focus purely on one thing, and that isn't going to work well.
Talk to us, David, about the global investment feelings these days, and maybe the strategy moving forward. Do you see companies changing their investments, looking more into the UK, more into the European Union, more into China? I mean, what are global investors doing?
I think you're seeing a couple of things. So people are taking some short-term tactical moves if they can. So, for example, you saw this with Apple, where they moved some iPhone production away from China and moved it to India. But they had facilities in both places. You know, if all your facilities are in China, you can't step up a new operation tomorrow in Albuquerque. It's just physically not possible. So what you're going to see is, you know, a certain amount of maybe transshipment, so trying to move the country of origin to something that's a little more favorable. You know, it's against the spirit of a treaty, but people do it all the time. But I also think you're going to see companies either adopt a position where, you know, the tariffs may not last for long, so we'll just kind of suck it up and see, or we'll just try to find new markets. But the scenario, I think the hardest thing for investors is uncertainty. And uncertainty is abundant right now, in that every day it seems like there's a new rule. And you can't make investments in this kind of scenario. Like, no one, because if you're making a decision to build a factory, that's a 20 to 30 year commitment. The rules could change tomorrow. You're not going to do that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the issue. That's the hardest thing for people right now, certainly in terms of making investments, trying to do strategic planning. They just don't know how to do it.
I know you and your colleagues always tell us that there's a lot of hedging that goes on. And I'm trying to figure out what the hedge is in some of this controversy. Where do you put your money?
It's hard to know. Certainly, like, you know, type of hedging that a lot of corporations will do, which is like managing interest rate risk or, you know, commodity risk or currency risk, is pretty straightforward. But managing economic risk, which is much more strategic, that's the one that's hard right now, because the outlook is just so uncertain. And what you see are some people just basically holding fast. And in the meantime, you have other countries, because sometimes, again, we kind of think it's, you know, the world revolves around us, right? Countries like the European, or groups like the European Union, countries like China, India, Vietnam, are all trying to attract people in. So, you know, our tariff deal is better than theirs, so why don't you come here? Or if you come here, you'll have more access to a third market. And I think what you're going to see, if anything, is, again, this kind of readjustment of trade, where, frankly, the U.S. becomes less of a kind of a pivot point, and people start looking at the U.S. amongst other locations.
David, great conversation as always. How can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one if they want?
Well, you can always call us on the trading desk, which is, the phone number is 866-524-8836, or my email, which is david.feller@associatedbank.com.
And you're only going to be able to do that for a couple more weeks.
Exactly.
David is retiring, so this is our last thought leader conversation with you. I have to tell you, thank you for giving us all of your expertise and insight, and we wish you the best in your retirement.
Oh, thank you very much. I've enjoyed these conversations so much over the years.
We'll come back anytime.
You'll be sorry you said that.
Yeah, all right. Good luck in your retirement.
Thank you.
All right.